Bloomberg Surveillance with Ken Pruitt and Tom Keene. If you're listening via our new Radio Plus iPhone app, did you know that you can hear Bloomberg Radio live 24 hours a day right on your phone? If you don't have the Radio Plus iPhone app yet, you'll want to download it. It's free via the iTunes App Store.
Now to London, George Magnus joins us with UBS. George, good morning.
Hi, Tom.
No haircuts, markets barely move, yield still elevated. Italy actually goes a little bit higher yield. Before the politics, there is the financial aspects of this evening in Europe. What did we learn this evening about the solvency and liquidity of Europe?
Well, we've learned quite a lot about the liquidity, and we had a kind of a down payment, as it were, from the European Central Bank yesterday, which kind of wheeled out quite a big liquidity bazooka to allow banks to fund themselves better for the next 2 or 3 years. And they did a few other things to try to alleviate the funding pressures on banks. The only thing I think we've learned about the solvency, which is really what this is all about ultimately, is that the ECB isn't going to buy sovereign bonds, at least until such time as there's a really catastrophic economic outcome in Europe. But as a caveat to that, the European leaders have agreed that 200 billion euros should be loaned to the IMF, and they hope that this will be a kind of a trigger for some BRIC money to come in as well.
Do you believe that?
With enhanced resources, therefore, the IMF may be in a stronger position to help some European countries if necessary.
Do you believe that? I mean, I find 200 billion to be a drop in the bucket. Am I wrong on that?
Well, it is. It's just, I suppose, that if you put the 200 billion in with an as yet unknown number from the emerging powers, and you add it to the IMF's existing loanable capacity, then potentially you could come up with some reasonable numbers. But I agree with you. I think that this is still really rather peripheral. Solvency will only improve eventually if we have better growth and in Europe, and the prospects for that, of course, look rather poor.
Well, George, this was the fifth attempt to solve the crisis. Five times is a charm or not?
There were kind of some funny stories going around yesterday about Angela Merkel, the German leader, saying that we may, need another summit before the end of the year. That's not been confirmed or anything, but I suspect that, this is going to happen again, I'm afraid. I mean, the financing, obviously there's quite a big fight back going on here in terms of, other things that the Europeans have done is to, to bring forward the inauguration of their kind of European Monetary Fund arrangement to June of next year. Obviously, the fiscal compact or the agreements they've reached about budgetary consolidations and so on, do kind of bind countries together a little bit more, at least for the next crisis, if not for this one. I think the most urgent thing really is that the debt crisis is just simply going to deteriorate with deficit targets slipping ever further into the future unless we can change this kind of single-minded focus on austerity as the only means of adjustment. The adjustment is pretty important, more important than the financing.
Well, part of this plan apparently is that nobody's going to take a haircut unless they bought Greek bonds.
Right.
Is that enough to get some money flowing into the Italian market, the Portuguese market, the Irish market?
Well, that's the idea, obviously, is to say that Greece is an exceptional case and in no way represents a template for anybody else. But, that's designed not... It's designed to ensure that investors aren't spooked by the prospect of it happening to them in other markets. But in the scheme of things, I think this comes... the answer to this, I think, comes back to the question about solvency. If investors don't believe that the prospects for solvency are improving... Then a situation which we already have, which is obviously a kind of distrust of sovereign bonds, and many investors actually are looking at even Italian and Spanish bonds as whether they should even be in their portfolio benchmarks. I don't think that's really going to improve.
Mm-hmm. George, when you look at this, there is a politics, and we're going to have you come back here. But I'm fascinated by the most important person in the United Kingdom today, which probably is a leadership of the Liberal Democratic Party, and Nick Clegg. I guess it's removed from Europe. Certainly, others on the show today have said the UK debate is separate from the solvency and liquidity debate of Europe. But nevertheless, it is a coalition government in the United Kingdom. Is it under threat this morning after these decisions by Prime Minister Cameron?
I think it's watch this space. The internal debate has been pretty muted so far. But we know that, the coalition, as successful as it's generally been so far, does have a number of fault lines running through it over domestic economic policy. And the European issue is potentially a much more divisive issue than even many of those are. And it is worrisome because obviously with David Cameron having vetoed the treaty changes proposed, the UK does stand a very, very serious chance of becoming ostracized and marginalized in Europe. And that may prove to be to the Prime Minister's great foresight and wisdom if things really go horribly wrong in the Eurozone. But if they don't, obviously, he's going to become greatly under pressure.
George, Lawrence Summers in the FT today calls for the IMF to be more vigilant. Is there any change in Europe's reticence to have the IMF step in?
The leaders have agreed that they can bilaterally make additional loans to the IMF, and I think that there may be a kind of a creeping realization. I think it's extremely reluctant, mind you, but a creeping realization that an IMF, a stronger IMF role in dealing with the European sovereign crisis actually may be inevitable. Obviously, it's been already included into the assistance packages for Greece, Ireland, and Portugal. And it's by no means inconceivable that within the coming year, another one will be needed for possibly Italy or Spain or both. I think that they don't like it, but I think it's kind of a bow to the inevitable, I think.
Well, George, as all this is going on, this is our Bloomberg story. BNP Paribas, Societe Generale, and Crédit Agricole, three of the biggest banks in France, have had their credit ratings cut by Moody's, which cited funding constraints and deteriorating economic conditions amid Europe's debt crisis. You add to that all the forecasts that if the Eurozone's not in a recession now, it will be soon, and European banks have to recapitalize in about 6 months, 6-7 months?
Yeah.
Does this make everything worse?
It certainly exacerbates what is already kind of a pretty gloomy kind of situation. I mean, the repurchase agreements, the liquidity support, which the European Central Bank made available in its announcement yesterday, I think will help the banks to keep funding themselves and to perhaps avoid the worst of an asset sale kind of spree, which would certainly make the economy much worse and in a very nasty negative feedback. But I think that really what the banks require, I'm not saying they're lobbying for this necessarily, but I think what the banking system needs is the introduction of guarantees which were promised at the end of October, but which haven't really happened as yet. Now, these may be announced later today, but these guarantees, I think, would be quite important because next year, a lot of the guarantees that were issued in 2008, 2009 will fall due and have to be, that will be terminated. So, there are some kind of encouraging steps in the wind that may help us kind of breathe a little bit of a sigh of relief that the funding crisis for banks may be easing a little bit. But I don't think it's quite gone as far as it needs to yet.
George, when you look at the discussion here on this Friday of market speaking, decidedly a ho-hum view with mixed spreads, even higher yields in some cases in Europe versus what the politicians are saying. How do the markets, in what metric do the markets use to get the politicians' attention? Is it the credit default space? Is it the bond markets? Is it currencies? How will the markets speak?
Well, you know, sometimes some people would say that in continental Europe, that it's quite difficult to get people to pay kind of serious attention to financial markets. And, you know, there's a mutual distrust that works both ways. But I think, the things that I think people really watch quite closely are the basic levels of yields on 10-year bonds. Particularly at the moment in Italy and Spain, and obviously the longer they stay at high or elevated levels, notwithstanding the limited purchasing which the European Central Bank is doing, even today, as I'm told, because that is a sort of a surefire metric about how sustainable, you know, the country's debt arithmetic actually is. Obviously, if yields, for one reason or other, were to sink back to around 4% or 4.5%, you know, then right. I think you call the fire brigade off.
Yeah. George, one last question, if I could, very quickly. We see Margaret Thatcher try to suggest Europe. She's thrown out. John Major tried to suggest Europe. He's thrown out. David Cameron steps up today. How will this change Brussels to have the United Kingdom step away this morning?
Well, I think it's a very serious development, and I say serious because I'm not trying to be alarmist here, but it's not inconceivable that it is perfectly conceivable that in the next few weeks and months that the UK will become more distant from EU or European Eurozone decision making. It's not inconceivable that the UK and I don't know, possibly one or two other countries, it depends on what the other non-members believe and think, but certainly that the schism between the United Kingdom and the rest of continental Europe actually could be fatal for the EU itself.
Let's leave it there. George Magnus, thank you so much for your perspective this morning. He is with UBS in London.
Listen to Bloomberg Surveillance weekday mornings at 7 on Bloomberg 1130 in New York or on Sirius and XM Satellite Radio Channel 113. Copyright 2011.